Everybody, looking forward to learning together again. Welcome back to another series in our class on Tefillah, the past, the practical, and the profound, where we talk about the history, the meaning, and the laws of Tefillah, of Jewish prayer. This morning, this afternoon, it's 2 p.m. already, we're going to do something a little bit different. You know, when we first started off this Shir series, we spoke first about the nature of the mitzvah of tefillah. We spoke about whether tefillah is a Torah obligation, if it's a rabbinic obligation, if it's from the Torah, what the source in the Torah is. That was the first shiur we had. And then we spoke about the history of tefillah, starting from the creation of the world, going to basically the proliferation of minhag following the destruction of the Second Temple. And then we moved on to more specific things, like specific prayers and specific halachos, and that's what we've been discussing. Today I want to take a step back. So together we'll actually do this. We'll take a step back, because there is something that's very important that we haven't actually done yet, which is we haven't actually spoken about the word tefillah. We haven't spoken the word that's typically used to connote and to talk about Jewish prayer. We haven't spent so much time on it. I think we have in certain cases mentioned it parenthetically, but we haven't actually made that the explicit focus of a class. And so today, that's what we'll do. I just want to remind people that, again, if you're on the email listserv, please let me know if you're not getting the emails about updates about when we're meeting. And if you would like to be on the listserv, so then see me after. We'll talk afterwards, okay? Okay, so this may be a shorter shiur today than usual, and the reason why is because we could have either... There are a number of ways to talk about the word tefillah. The word tefillah is an interesting word, and in theory, we could have done one long shiur with, like, here's one interpretation, here's another interpretation, here's a third interpretation. I figured that was not the right move for this... For this topic, because I think that if we have a series on the word tefillah, if we had maybe shorter shiurim that were a little bit more detailed, I think it would have more of an impact, as opposed to, I think it cheapens it a little bit when you just have a long shiur and then you go like kind of very programmatically, list by list by list. This is one meaning, this is one meaning, that's one meaning. So I think that kind of cheapens it a little bit, because it just... You don't have a chance to digest each individual one until another one is thrown at you. So I think we're going to have, maybe this time and next time, we'll have two shorter shiurim. Again, I think you could have combined them, but I think this allows for maximum impact and maximum exploration of the topic at hand. And the truth is that we met last three weeks ago, because we skipped a week because it was January 1st, and people said that they were not going to be around for that. So the truth is, this was originally supposed to be closer to the parsha in which it occurs, because this is relevant to Parshat Vayechi, as we'll see. Now we're about to read this coming week, Parshat Va'era. But hopefully, you know, as they say, good Torah, as I like to say, good Torah transcends time. Just because it's not in the Parsha that you're currently reading does not mean that it can't be meaningful or relevant. You know, Jews often have an affinity towards something. If it's in the Parsha, we'll learn about it. But if it's not in the Parsha, so we'll wait until it gets to the Parsha. I don't think you have to do that. I think that it's okay to learn about and talk about Torah topics, even if it's not directly in the Parsha that you're reading about. Okay, so that's basically the way, the long introduction to what's really, I think, a very fundamental topic when it comes to the study of tefillah, which is the meaning of tefillah, the meaning of the word tefillah, and what that means for us. That's what we're going to talk about today. There are a number of interpretations of the word tefillah, and we're not going to get to all of them today. Today we're just going to explore one. What is tefillah? What is one approach for the meaning of tefillah? This is probably the most common approach, although I think it's still quite profound. And next week we'll talk about another one. Okay, sound good? Okay, great. Fantastic. So when we talk about tefillah in English, we often use the word, we translate it as prayer, or to pray. I think that's the most typical translation of the word tefillah that people usually use. Is prayer an appropriate translation for tefillah? What do you think? No, well, obviously, because I'm asking the question, the answer has to be no. So the answer is that if you look in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, on the first source on the page, the word prayer is Middle English from a bunch of French words that are difficult to pronounce, from the medieval Latin word precaria, feminine of precarious, which means obtained by entreaty. So the word prayer has its roots and really its deepest meaning, not necessarily in communication or supplication. It really has more to do with acquiring than it does with communication. The way prayer, in its truest, most original form, means to obtain or to acquire. The actual conversation with God is just a means to getting that thing. The purpose of tefillah is to acquire something. The purpose of prayer is to acquire something. The purpose of prayer, thank you. The purpose of prayer, excuse me, very important. The purpose of prayer is to acquire something. That's what prayer really comes from. It comes from the Latin word precarious. So when we say we're going to pray, we might be intending it as an interpretation of tefillah, but what it really means, what prayer really means, if you look at its original etymology, is to obtain or to acquire by means of communicating with God. But the communication with God is actually just a means to an end. It's a means of obtaining or acquiring whatever you want. When I pray, let's say I pray for a new dining room table, so I'm talking to God in order to obtain that. And that's very transactional. I would argue that that is not what Jewish prayer is. I think part of Jewish prayer is certainly asking for things. When we are mitpalel, when we daven, when we do tefillah, I think part of what we're doing is asking for things. But that is not the thing that we're doing. It's not the only thing that we're doing. It's not necessarily the most important thing when we're doing. And so we should be wary. We should be wary as people who live in this world that when we use prayer, it may just be, as Winston Churchill said about democracy. He said, democracy is the best of a number of bad options. There's no form of governance that's good. Democracy is just the best of the worst. And the same thing is, I think, true for prayer. Prayer may be the best word to use in translation, but it is not a good term because it actually is very limited and it has connotations that are not necessarily consonant with actual tefillah. Tefillah is not necessarily so closely aligned with the word prayer. And the truth is, we talk about Hebrew. Tefillah is the Hebrew translation of prayer, even if it's a bad translation. Where does tefillah come from? Where does the word tefillah come from? So the truth is, the Torah uses a number of words to describe communicating with God. Vayetar, when Yitzchak was davening opposite his wife. But tefillah is probably the most common. Vayit Palel Hashem, Moshe does. There are a number of times where the Torah uses Chana's tefillah. Also, a little later in Jewish history, absolutely. Well, the Torah tells us V'chana hi medaberet aliba, that she was speaking through from her heart. So I don't know if the Torah uses tefillah there. But it is a prayer. Yeah. So the Torah, what is the shoresh? What is tefillah? Let's start with the question. What is the root word of tefillah? What's the shoresh? The shoresh hamila. Pei lamed lamed. Does that make sense? Pei lamed lamed is the root word of tefillah, which is plila or the palel. The tav at the end, at the beginning of it, which makes it into tefillah, changes not the shoresh of the word, but it changes the conjugation of the word, as we'll see in just a couple of minutes. But first, if we want to get an understanding of what tefillah is, it pays for us to see where that first shoresh appears in Tanakh. What's the first time that the Torah talks about pei lamed lamed, someone doing, and I don't want to translate that because I don't want to taint it with whatever we're going to interpret. What's the first time we see someone doing pei lamed lamed? Shoresh pei lamed lamed. What's the first time? So the answer is it's in Parshat Vayechi in Bereishis Parag Memchet. The Torah tells us that when Yaakov is about to pass away, the source number 2, Ve'eina Yisrael kavdu mizoken lo yuchal lirot vayigash otam elav vayishak lehem vayechabek lehem. Yosef brings his children, Ephraim and Manasseh, close to Yaakov. And Yaakov says something very interesting. Yaakov says, Vayomer Yisrael el Yosef. He says to Yosef, Ro'o fanecha lo pilalti. That's exactly our word. I never expected to, well, see, Ro'o fanecha lo pilalti. I never pilalti to see your face. And here I have not even seen you, but I've seen your children as well. Again, I was never pilalti to see your face, and God has allowed me to see even your children. So before you look, don't look any further on the source sheet. Right now, if you had to interpret that verse, what would you say it means? What is Yaakov saying? I never pilalti that I would see your face, but here I am actually seeing your children also.
I didn't expect to see
them. Expect. So pilalti means to expect. Okay, anything else? Anything else? It was pilalti. I never pilalti that I would pilalti that I would drink this water. Does that make sense? I don't know. What does pilalti actually mean? So let's see what Rashi says. Rashi is a good person to go to for this. Rashi writes right below this in source number 3, lo pilalti. Lo mileani libi lachshov machshava. I never allowed the thought to creep into my heart that I would have seen your face. Lo mileani libi lachshov machshava. I never allowed the thought that I would ever see you again to creep into my heart, and now I have even been able to see your children. I never let myself think that I ever would have seen you again, and I have seen now even your children. So it seems from here that lipalel pilalti means that allow myself to think, to reflect. I never thought basically that I would have seen you again, and now I have seen you again. I've even seen your kids. That seems to be what Rashi is saying our pasuk means. If we read that back into the verse, Ra'o panecha lo pilalti, to see your face, I never would have thought, I never would have reflected, allowed myself to think. V'hine ra'oti Elokim gam et zaracha, but I've seen even your children. Okay. That's the Hebrew word for prayer, at least for the conjugation pei lamed lamed that appears in the Torah. Okay. So we see from here that at least the first time it's used, and by the way, Rashi quotes a pasuk in Yeshayahu, pilalti, as if this wasn't clear enough, lashon machshava. It's the language that means to think, machshava. Kemo hevi'i etza asif lila. As it says, give counsel, carry out the thought. In Yeshayahu, he quotes a pasuk from the 16th parak tetzayin of Yeshayahu, but he says very clearly, lo mileani libi lachshov machshava, pilalti lashon machshava. Lashon machshava, what is machshava? Thought, to think, lachshov is to think. So basically, pilalti in its first iteration in the Torah means to think. I never would have thought, I never would have reflected, I never would have cognized that I would ever see you again. That seems to be what the meaning of palel is if you look at its first occurrence in the Torah. That's how Rashi explains it. Okay. Now, if we were to transplant that word, that meaning, onto what we do, and to describe the way we talk to God, how would that work? What does it mean if we were to lipalel? If I was saying now, ani mipalel, what does that mean?
I'm thinking.
But that's not actually the word we use. I mean, that's the shoresh of the word we use, but what's the word we actually use? Not pilila. It's tefillah. There's a tav at the beginning, and we have some Israelis here, so they might be a little more advanced in figuring this out. But that actually changes the conjugation of the verb from what to what. Does anybody know what a tav does if it's at the beginning of a word? Okay, let's look at the following. If you look in the English formation of reflexive verbs, this is from a Hebrew grammar website, I thought it summarized the issue very nicely. Reflexive verbs in Hebrew are derived from the root shoresh of the verb. What's a reflexive verb? What's a reflexive verb?
No.
What is it in English? What is a reflexive verb? What is it? If a verb becomes reflexive, what does that mean? Yes. It's as if the subject is, something is happening to the subject, or the subject is doing something to themselves. That's what it's reflexive. It's back on you. It's back on the subject. So reflexive verbs in Hebrew have the same shoresh as their non-reflexive counterparts. However, the most common binyan, the most common conjugation essentially associated with reflexive verbs is hitpa'el, tav, and then the actual shoresh. And here's how we actually explain this better. If you look at number one, a tav is added to the verb when conjugated in the past and future tenses. For example, what does it mean, likabel? What does that mean? If ani kibalti, what does that mean? I receive. So what do you think lehit kabel means? To be received. I was received. That's the reflexive form of the term. So here, if you have likabel, that means I received. If you say lehit kabel, that means I was received. They received me. Exactly. Exactly. And if it's in the past tense, what would you say if it was I received? Ani?
Kibalti.
Exactly. And if it's reflexive, what does that become? Hitkabalti. I was received in the past tense. Exactly right. And that is how basically hitpa'el reflexive binyanim actually work. It takes a tav and it makes the word reflexive, which means that it goes back on you. So now let's try to apply that. And by the way, there's a...
But I think hitpa'el is two ways. You know, yes, it's reflecting on you, but you also...
can reflect it on yourself.
Yeah, on yourself, but you are expected to do something too. It's not only you get something... But you do, it's both ways.
Sure. So when it comes to conjugating reflexive verbs, and this will actually really allow us to understand what to make of the word plila and how it becomes tefillah and what that difference means, reflexive verbs in Hebrew follow regular conjugational patterns, allowing for a straightforward conjugation process. In the present tense, reflexive verbs in hitpa'el follow a standard pattern with the root mit mem tav tav plus root plus the end, mitpa'el. So let's say, right, ani mitkabel means I am received. Ani, if I'm a man, if you're a female, ani mitkabelet. If I was talking to a man, I would say ata mitkabel. If I was talking to a female, I would say at mitkabelet. Does this make sense? This makes sense? Okay, good. Because it actually sets the stage for us to do something important with the word tefillah, right? Okay. We encountered the word tefillah, just to summarize, but we did not encounter it in the reflexive form tefillah. We encountered it in the pelila, without the tav. So without the tav, it means to think. Lashon machshava, as Rashi said. What does it mean? Let's say you take the word pelila and you make it reflexive. What does that mean? You make pelila into tefillah. You, instead of ani mipalel, ani mitpalel. Or mitpalelet. What is that? What do you think that does? If tefila means to think, then what does it mean if you reflexive think? What do you think that means?
Forget something, right?
It means to make yourself think. It means to make yourself think. If tefila means to think, then tefila as the reflexive version of that is to make yourself think or to be thought, to cause something to happen to you that causes you to think. And so now we can start to piece together an understanding, and I think it really prompts a paradigm shift in the way we think about tefillah and as follows, and it's pointed out by my actual former Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi David Aaron, if anybody's heard of him. He's a rabbi and a Kabbalist who lives in the old city of Jerusalem. And he, in a blog post, but he's also written this in his books, and he's spoken about it in his classes, I was there, he explains as follows. When we lehit palel, we are actively thinking the thoughts, dreaming the dreams of what it is on the back of page 2, that of what it is we want to see and do in this world, and then change ourselves in order to make things happen. It is not God whom we are trying to change. It is ourselves and our relationship with God we are trying to change through prayer. If we change ourselves, we change our whole situation. Please do not misunderstand this important principle. Lehit palel does not mean to meditate and talk to yourself as if you could ever make things happen for yourself without God. Of course, God listens to our prayers and answers, but we are not trying to change God's mind. We are trying to change ourselves. God's mind is steadfast. God only and always loves us and wants to shower us with blessings. Prayer is about changing ourselves. Prayer is about attuning our will to God's will and making ourselves receptive to His loving presence and blessings into our lives. God is waiting to hear from us and invite Him into our lives. Okay, what does this mean? What does this mean? Well, if plila means to think, and tefila means to make yourself think, then what we do when we are daven is we are forcing ourselves to reckon with certain things. We're causing ourselves to think about certain things, and then to change ourselves. Lehit palel, to change the way that we are thinking about things. And, you know, the question then becomes, and this is an important question I acknowledge, is okay, well, thinking about what? What are we trying to think about? What are we supposed to be doing here? So I would argue that the Shemona Esrei is exactly that. When you say the Shemona Esrei, you're saying 18, really 19 brachot. Now, those are not supposed to be rotely recited, as many people do, as I myself am guilty of some of the time, and just done away with. You know, Rav Soloveitchik used to say, the problem with American Jews is not that they want to daven, it's that they want to have daven. I'll repeat that all the time. Is that people actually want to pray. They want to have prayed. They want to have done the thing so they can check it off on their boxes. What? Exactly, exactly. And the point of tefillah, I think, when you read the Shemona Esrei, is it's supposed to make you think about, how do I think about that? When you read the bracha, for example, of Vili Yerushalayim, where we actually pray for our return to Zion, to Tzion, to Yerushalayim, if we take this meaning of tefillah as it's something that we cause ourselves to think of, when we read those verses about returning to Tzion, if we are doing tefillah right, when we read that in Shemona Esrei, it means that we should be making ourselves think about what is my relationship to that. Do I want to return to Tzion? Do I want what I'm supposed to want? I think that's really the central question of Jewish prayer, is do I want what I'm supposed to want? When we recite the Shemona Esrei, that's basically Chazal's way of telling us, who established Shemona Esrei, these are what our priorities should be. These are, our priorities should be peace. Our priorities should be health, the bracha of Rifa'enu. Our priorities should be dachonin dad, attaining and acquiring wisdom. Our priorities should be hashivashovtenu, the establishment of a just legal system and righteousness. And when we recite those things, to do tefillah is to cause us to think. It's for us to read that and make ourselves think about what our relationship to the things that we're saying is. Do I want these things as badly as I say I want them? We daven, many of us daven three times a day for the bracha of Vili Yerushalayim. But when push comes to shove, how bad do we really want Yerushalayim? When we talk about the return to the Beit HaMikdash, Ritzei V'techazena, okay, I say it. I say I want it so often. But how badly do I actually want it? Are the ways that I think and feel about the brachot that I'm saying actually consistent with what's expected of me and what standard I'm held to? When I say the bracha of Rifa'enu and I ask God to heal the people who are sick and suffering in this world, do I do that and then I go watch TV? Or does my soul, and not that that's necessarily the worst thing in the world, but does my soul really ache for the people who are sick and suffering? I think that when we say Shemona Esrei, we think about these things, we force ourselves to reckon with how true they are for us. And that's what tefillah is, according to this approach. Next week, we'll look at a different approach. But tefillah, if you look in the Torah, where does tefillah come up? Tefillah means to think. Palila means to think. Tefillah means to make myself think. What am I making myself think about? Well, I think that's the whole point of Shemona Esrei. I'm making myself think about the things that I'm saying when I daven. I'm asking myself, I'm reckoning with, I'm making myself think critically about those, my relationship to those kinds of things. Because it's very easy, I'll tell you the truth, it's very, very easy to go to shul, to daven the Shemona Esrei, and not to be changed. And not to be changed. To basically walk out of shul the same exact way you went in. But if we can really, it's really magical if you can do it, to go into shul and say, I'm going to, and it's not easy work. It's not easy work, by the way, to necessarily have to come to terms with maybe that you don't want the things that we're supposed to want. There's a lot of room for cognitive dissonance in that. People say, okay, whatever. But it's hard work. It's hard work. It's hard work. You know, people go to a gym and they sign up for a gym membership and they expect it to be physically demanding. But then when it comes to doing actual mental, psychological, emotional work, I think it's much easier for people to get frustrated when it's actually difficult. That's understandable, but the truth is it's part of the hard work. Part of hard work means thinking critically about what I want. And I think that Shmona Esrei is basically a 19 bracha order of our, not an order necessarily, but a listing of our priorities. And when we say Shmona Esrei, when we do tefillah, I think we're coming to terms. That's one interpretation. We're coming to terms with what the tefillah is telling us to want, and we're forced to ask ourselves, I'm sitting here davening for this. I'm sitting here davening for Etzemach David Avdecha. I'm sitting here davening for the return of the Davidic monarchy. Do I want the Davidic monarchy? Do I even know what that means? Do I want that? So I think that's the process of tefillah. The process of tefillah is re-encountering the things we're supposed to want, and then asking ourselves, okay, where am I? How am I doing on that want scale? Do I even understand what it is that I'm wanting? And that's what tefillah is. And over a lifetime of refining yourself by reapproaching that text over and over again, we can get closer and closer and closer to wanting what it is we're supposed to want. So that's one interpretation of the meaning of tefillah. And that's really it. That's really all I have to say for today. A short shiur. It was, about half an hour. It's not so short. But in any case, that's one interpretation of the meaning of tefillah. I hope you found it meaningful something that we can change the way that we pray. And next week, we'll try to come back with one or two more interpretations to talk about. Anybody? Sorry, not in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks. In